Dun 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 dun. Oscar watch watch. Mackenzie. The Oscars were last week. We're a little bit behind with our coverage here, but final check-in, I guess, of award season closing. How did your Oscar watching go? And then let's start with that. Did you get through all the films?
I did. 53 of 53. I did it. I did do it. It was.
Were there any that you just flat out didn't like?
Yes, absolutely. There were definitely some. And there were some that I like went out of the theater like, what the fuck did I just waste my time on? And I will say that inevitably happens every year. There's one or two. There were definitely a couple this year. I think it's also one of the problems too is that obviously it's nominated for a bunch of awards and you're like, am I the idiot? Like, did I not get it? So every time that happens
it's the
to
children
me,
who are wrong.
Exactly. Every time I go home, I like try to Google to validate myself. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, what did I just watch? What did I miss? What do I not understand?
No.
It often does not resolve things for me, but I try to see what they're talking about.
Okay. Well, you got through all the movies, so congratulations. Everyone out there should be giving her a round of applause, unless you're at the wheel. But second question would be, after watching the Oscars themselves, what's your biggest, hands down, agree this was the 100% right call on this award? And then what is your hands down, I completely disagree and something else should have won?
Oh, such a good question.
Thank you.
So I did pretty well this year as far as I normally track, like, what do I want to win on my little Oscars ballot? I do, what do I want to win? What do I think is going to win? And what actually wins? And this year, I kind of like combined the what do I want to win and what do I think is going to win.
Yeah.
And then I did what was going to win. And so I got 15 out of 23. So I was pretty close on most of my guesses, if not all. Some of those were stubborn, too, where it was like, I really don't want this to win, but I think it might, kind of thing.
So you had to go with your head instead of your heart.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, but one of the ones that I do not understand why it won, that I am like quite a bit ragey about, and this was one of the ones I went home and googled, you know what I mean? Did some research and was like, what did I miss? Was The Boy and the Heron, which it won for Best Animated Feature Film, which is, if you're not familiar with some of the Studio Ghibli work, that's like Asian anime, really, you know, quote unquote, highbrow animation films. They always have like a great moral to them. They're beautifully animated. They often have gorgeous music, all these great things. And my thing with all of those is that for me, they're a solid 50-50. Like, okay, sometimes I love them and sometimes I'm like, what the fuck did I just watch? Mm-hmm. And this one was a what the fuck did I just watch for me? And
yeah, I've never been a big Miyazaki. I'm not sure if Miyazaki does all the Studio Ghibli films
but a classic. Yeah,
but I've seen one or two and they're fine. I just didn't get big into them. But I have friends who love Miyazaki and even they were saying this is not one of their favorites.
I didn't like it. And I am even ashamed to admit this. I was like falling asleep in the theater. Like I don't do that. I'm in there. I'm in the zone. I'm into it. It was a 6 o'clock show. You know what I mean? It wasn't like it was late. Like, I just was struggling to stay engaged. And I even more so because I was like, oh God, I must have missed something. I must have dozed off and missed something. So again, I reread the plot and did all this stuff. Like, what did I miss? No, I saw all the high points. I definitely did. Like, I remember all the things that happened. The music was really cool, and the animation was good, like it always is. But I fundamentally didn't like the story. I fundamentally didn't like the story. I didn't think it packed much of a punch. I don't get the point of this. The main character, the heron, is actually like kind of a heron goblin type of figure. And like, it's like a grotesque figure that I'm like, I don't understand why this is the person leading us through this story. So yeah, that was a hard no for me. Like, I would have definitely gone in that same category, for example, was Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Which, as we have talked about on the pod previously.
I was shocked that one didn't win after, I mean, I didn't see The Boy and the Heron, but I believe the first one did win for Best Animated Picture. So I assumed the second one would, because the animation in this was even better.
I don't know if it was just like a sequel thing where like sequels don't win as much or what, or if the first one kind of like we said on the pod previously of like, it broke that ground and now we're all think it's normal. I don't know, but I still think that the animation was incredible, to your point, like even better than the first one and really unique and all of that. So like I would have gone Spider-Man as my first choice, and as a second choice, I would have done Elemental, which is a Pixar and was really good. And it was this beautiful story. And I'm like crying at the end of it. I mean, as this Pixar does to you. So anyway, anything in that category practically could have won over fucking The Boy and the Heron, as far as I'm concerned, including Robot Dreams, which had no dialogue at all. It was purely animation. That was a really unique one for sure. I don't know that it should have won, but it was a really unique one. So yeah, it's an interesting category this year. And I just felt like they just gave it to Studio Ghibli, which I was not about.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it's sort of like one of the, but he's won before. I was going to say maybe it's one of those legacy wins that you talk about, but.
Yeah. I also think like, again, I don't know. It's kind of like, it's like a Scorsese for me, right? Like you throw him in a category and they're like, he's going to win. You know what I mean? And I'm just, doesn't mean that that's their best work, you know, in my opinion, but anyway. But I think my favorite one that I was just very, I was so glad to see recognized. It was like a hard yes for me that they won. It's actually kind of a weird one probably, which was the best sound category. And that's because in watching it, like it wasn't a post analysis. It wasn't something like, oh, I Googled it and read a bunch of reviews. It was in the moment in the theater watching The Zone of Interest and being blown away by the use of sound of the in this film. And it was up against some contenders. Like I will say there's some very good work in this
with
category.
AHC at the end. Yes. Contenders. That's how you know.
Exactly. But yeah, there was some real heavy competition, and I still felt like this was far and away the most interesting because it so contributed to the story in a really intentional way. And again, when you're in a theater sitting there going like, whoa, these sounds, like you're that standing out to you, I felt like that was really impactful. And it I think it's very symbolic. The Zone of Interest, for those of you who don't know, is a film about the director of the camp at Auschwitz in World War II and his family who lived literally abutted to the wall of the camp, right? But you never see the inside of the camp in this film. You only see this home and this home life. And so there's a very interesting use of these stark contrasts of sounds. These like this home life sound of your normal, almost suburban noises you'd be used to hearing against a backdrop that is very intentional of things that are happening in a camp. And that's all I'll say, but it's very, very interesting, intense, and creative and intentional use of sound that I thought was really profound. So I thought that was very well deserved. Yeah.
Still on my watch list. I'm going to get around to that one. I think it started streaming somewhere recently. Maybe.
I think so. I don't know why I want to say Paramount Plus. Don't hold me to that, but I feel like that was maybe one of them. But yeah, I highly recommend it. But again, it's like, it's heavy. And if you haven't watched the Oscars yet, Jonathan Glazer, who won for this, got a lot of flack for his speech. But this is, you know, he did this film about one of the most horrific genocides in world history, as we well know. And he did a beautiful job of it, I think. So it was really nice to see him win for that. And well-deserved, I think, again, from a technical standpoint, like, whew, wow, incredible.
I think World War II won like 80% of the Oscars this year. All these stories intertwine with World War II is having a great, great 2024.
Man, I feel like we're in an unfortunate need of reminding about that. So I think it's reflective of the times. I tell people all the time, probably ad nauseum, like art reflects life. It really does. And people are seeing commonalities and themes that make them inspired to do this kind of work. And, you know, I don't think it's lost on me, at least, that there are some real parallels, but some beautiful, profound work coming out of that from an artistic perspective. But overall, I think the Oscars were kind of what I expected them to be. The best picture category was a really hard category this year. I think there were some really great showings, but like we said on our Oppenheimer versus Barbie, like back-to-back weeks or whatever we did, Oppenheimer is just like a masterclass in filmmaking. Yeah. So I'm just really not surprised that it won as much as it did. I mean, it won, what, 7 things, I think. It was amazing.
Well, all that to say, another year with no Oscars for Predator, any of the Predators. And that's where I'll weigh in. I didn't actually watch the Oscars, but that's my big takeaway after reading the wrap-up. So
no Predator wins. Got it. Got it. If you could pick something that you did see over the last year to be nominated, win an Oscar for something. I know this is, I'm throwing you a curveball here, but like, what would be something that you did see that you were just like, oh, this was completely overlooked. This was so great.
Predator 2. I watched it a couple weeks ago. Best director. That's my answer.
Cut print, moving on. All right. Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
And I'm Super Bowl winner Troy Aikman, here to talk about a football movie with you. That's what we need, some guest stars, some Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, man. Why didn't we think of that? Why didn't we think of a guest star?
Well, I'm Lamar. Sorry.
I was going to say, way to fuck us up here already. We're two seconds in and we're already doing it wrong. Well,
you pushed the recording time back by an hour and that gave me time to finish the drink that I had made for the first session. So I'm in a great mood.
So it's my fault. I got it. I mean, I'm here for it. And it's going to make for a spicy up. Let's go. All right. Well, folks, we are continuing our March Madness with another light one. If y'all don't recall, or maybe this is the first time you're tuning in a hot minute, we have been doing a lot of heavy shit. So this week's entry is The Replacements, a football flick, not to be confused with a flea flicker. And I'm super excited.
I thought you were going to say not to be confused with the band, The Replacements, because it was very strange Googling stuff for research on this, because I had to always specify Replacements movie, not Replacements band.
Oh, no. I was definitely thinking in football terms because I love football, which I think is going to be clear as I watch this movie. But also, I know this movie being the choice might be another, you know, contentious choice. But again, I think it's just such a cool, it's just a fun, lighthearted flick. There are a lot of great football movies for sure. But I thought this was a fun one.
It's a solid choice. And I was looking around online and I saw that, like, this consistently, if you Google, you know, best football movies, typically this ends up in the top 10 on most people's. I know there's multiple sources out there, but it seems like most people's list, this ends up at number 9, number 10, maybe number 14 or so, but it's never kept completely off. And that actually surprised me. But then when I think about how many legitimately great football movies are there, there's not that many. And this isn't perfect by any means. We're going to talk about that. But it is fun. Like you said, lighthearted. And it's just an enjoyable watch with maybe some stuff that hasn't aged so well, which we'll talk about.
Oh, my God. We will talk about that. Okay. Well, I already have comments because I want to hear what our honorable mentions would be. But before we get into that, what are you drinking today?
So I basically took the recipe for a frozen strawberry daiquiri, but I added in some mango puree and a little bit of lime juice. And I'm going to call this the Falco for our boy Shane Falco, because he's just so mellow. Like, obviously he's played by Keanu Reeves, but he's living on his boat and he just takes everything in stride, whether that's because he really is that mellow or it's just because Keanu Reeves is playing him. Either way, he just seems like the type of dude that would enjoy a good daiquiri. So that's what I'm going with here.
Oh my God, I love it so much. Also because you guys can't see it, but it's like this beautiful red color that kind of matches the Washington Sentinels
like
the
Sentinels.
I love it. You did great.
What about you? What you drinking?
Well, I went the Annabelle route of it all, which feels kind of appropriate. So Annabelle's the cheerleader, you know, and the poor girl busts out wine at one point in this movie and sits alone as a sad, sad panda in her bar waiting for this kid to show up for a date. So I don't know, out of solidarity, I was like, I think I'm just going to have a glass of wine with our girl who it just sat there. I hope she drank it. So I'm drinking it for her, if not.
Now, Mackenzie, would you say you don't date football players? Because your girl, Annabelle, who's drinking the wine, we needed to know that about her. She does not. I don't know why every movie in like the 90s and aughts was like, I don't date, insert sport here, player
right.
from the one female character in the movie.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because boundaries, that's why.
Yeah, they're important in the workplace. Yeah, you're right.
But that being said, she immediately compromises her boundaries. But that's fine. No, was not my vibe for sure, for sure. But you know what? I also didn't date football players, and I dated football players. You know what I mean? So I did.
Okay.
I pulled an Annabelle as
you
well.
You made
so.
Exceptions,
right?
And also, she's full of shit because that same actress who dates a football player in this. I know we haven't gotten into the cast yet. I'm getting ahead of myself, but she would go on to be in the Friday Night Lights television series, in which she dates an underage football player as a grown-ass woman. We don't need to get into the specifics of that.
Wow.
It's dramatic television. But yes, she has a thing for football players. So
clearly, clearly lied. Also, sidebar, I've never seen Friday Night Lights, which will shock most people.
We have too. You're talking about the TV show or the movie. You haven't seen either?
I haven't seen either. I haven't seen either. Which, like, it's just like, I can't remember. I feel like Friday Night Lights wasn't on, maybe it was on cable. I don't know. When it was out, it was like not my shtick for whatever reason. And then it's just been on the list to go back and watch ever since. And I just like haven't done it. Haven't done it, but I want to. I've heard
you
great
need to,
things.
You'll come over. Me, you, and Janelle will do, because we want to do a rewatch anyway. And it's all filmed around here in Austin and Round Rock, all nearby. And you started this podcast by saying you love football. So I feel like you got to do Friday Night Lights, at least
the
television series.
I do. That's why I feel like I'm kind of, I feel like people would be surprised that I haven't seen it. So yes, I'm down for a rewatch. We'll put it on the list for sure. Maybe we drunk rewatch as bonus eps of the pod. I'm just
saying. Hell yeah.
Well, all that to say, we do love football here on the pod, and I'm super excited to talk about this one. I do want to talk quickly before we dig into it. Honorable mentions. Like I said, I think there are so many good football movies, and I'm curious what you think. A couple that came up for me today, just again, riffing, Any Given Sunday, I love. Rudy, I love, which of course, like heartstrings. Remember the Titans is a great one. There are more. Anyway, what are some that are top of mind for you that you love?
Remember the Titans is up there. That might be my favorite. I think if I had to pick one good football movie to sit down and watch like a drama, I think I would go with Remember the Titans. But honestly, Mackenzie, I'm going to tell you, I really enjoy The Waterboy. I know you hate Adam Sandler, and we promised the people last week we would touch on this. So why do you hate fun, Mackenzie?
I have never been attacked in what I think is a more accurate and offensive way. Sometimes I don't love fun. And in my movies, that's maybe one of the places. But Adam Sandler in general, I'll have my quick rant here. I loved a Billy Madison, you know, I watched a mini Adam Sandler when I was younger and thought like, oh, this is funny or silly or what have you. And on a first watch, I liked certain things, but almost none of it held up for me, you know, like even in my later teens, you know what I mean? Like, we're not talking like, oh, 12 and 30, right? We're talking like later teens.
You were ahead of the Adam Sandler curve, where all of us eventually kind of got sick of him, but still can sort of rose-tinted glasses watch the stuff. You were just like, no, I'm already tired of this humor.
I'm just already tired of it, for sure. Yeah. Fair. I think also a contributing factor is that my sister, when we were kids, was obsessed with Adam Sandler. So like she would play his stand-up, like his recordings of his stand-up, which were really just silly skits. And then also like watch The Waterboy excessively. Like, we watched The Waterboy an alarming number of times. So even though I don't particularly want to talk about it and rewatch it, I probably have it fucking memorized. Like, I've seen it so many times. So yeah, he's just not my favorite, but he's done a couple dramatic roles that I liked that I thought were well done. But yeah,
Uncut
not
Gems.
I actually didn't love that. I thought he performed well, but that movie stressed me the fuck out. I was like at 1,000 the whole time.
Well,
but,
which, Mackenzie, you don't like fun. You don't like being stressed. I'm just trying. What's your sister's name? Does she want to do a podcast?
She should do a podcast. Avery, come in, relieve me.
Kidding.
I loved Rain Over Me. He did. Was great. And he did an incredible job on that one, I thought. And I actually really liked Big Daddy when it came out. I did like Billy Madison. And some of these are very quotable. These are quotable and fun. Like, I will spit the quotes out all day long. But it's not,
I guess, I forgive
you,
because it does sound like some of it was just the amount of repetition of being forced to watch a movie you didn't particularly want to watch. I guess I can relate to that, because look at, I can say Little Mermaid is a good movie, but I hated it when I was a kid because my sister watched it twice a day.
That's
so,
right. You were saying that.
Yeah. But the thing, I think what threw me was the, one of the things I wanted to call out about The Replacements is just watching it. I was like, it's not perfect. And I think the IMDb, I'm not sure if you have the Metacritic, but it's like a 6.5 or something on IMDb.
6.6. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty much what I would put it at, is just, it's a very fun film, but it's not perfect. Mm-hmm. But my thought while watching it was, this is such a good example of that tried and true formula of, let's just take a bunch of zany characters, almost like stereotypes, put them in a room, like in some kind of scene or on a team or whatever it might be, and like see what works. And it's just the cast goes all in on it. And that's what makes for a good movie. But that's with The Waterboy. I was shocked because this movie to me feels like there's 8 Waterboys running around the field, like a bunch of zany characters. But Waterboy is just really one guy going crazy. So, yeah.
That's a great point. That's a great point. I mean, maybe it really is an Adam Sandler thing for me. Who knows? But I do think this is kind of fun. Like, I do think this movie is kind of fun. And I, one of the reviews I read, for example, was like, if you accept it for what it is, it's a good time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's this silly sports movie. It's not trying to be anything that it's not. It's trying to be cheesy. It's trying to be an homage to a bunch of different sports films. You know, and I think that if you, again, just let that happen and resonate, again, it's a good time. It's a fun time. So maybe this was just the sweet spot.
Yeah, I can tell you all right now that this is going to end up probably, I didn't go back and listen to it, but wherever Bring It On ended up, this is the same class of movie. It is not perfect, definitely hasn't aged well in some capacities, but it's still fun.
Yeah, it is. That is such a good comparison, and it's so funny you have that comparison because I have a comparison later in the film to Bring It On. But before we get into the weeds with all that, so like we said, the IMDb rating was 6.6 out of 10. The Rotten Tomatoes, for example, was like 41% for critics, 66% for audiences. That tracks exactly, right? It's not like a critical acclaim, but the audiences had a good time. So that all makes sense. And then important to note, I think, this came out in 2000. So just want that. Just everybody, that was 24 years ago. I know it hurts. I know it hurts to hear. It hurt me when I read it. But it's 24 years old. So some of this stuff doesn't age great. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Are you going to quote any of it directly to give examples, or we're not going to talk about it?
I mean, I guess I could. I don't know that I want to. I don't think.
And that was the last episode of We Drink and We Watch Things, the podcast.
I was going to say, I don't think I want recorded audio out there in the world of me saying some of these things, but you know, that's neither here nor there.
I had to rewind twice and be like, did they just say what I think they said? Because it's a little muffled. And yeah,
if you're thinking of Chinaman, then you would be correct.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yes. Okay. So all that to say, some of this doesn't age well, but this was directed by Howard Deutsch. I assume you say Deutsch. I don't know if that's exactly
how I would say Deutsch. Yeah.
I would say Deutsch.
Deutsch. Let's just
Deutsch.
Keep saying it back and forth.
Say
oh,
Deutsch.
This is going to be an episode. Okay.
This is, again, we are feeling spicy today, guys. Hope you don't mind. But he did Pretty in Pink, Some Kind of Wonderful, Grumpy Old Men.
I was going to say, on the topic of Grumpy Old Men, I was looking at, and Pretty in Pink was the one that stood out to me.
Sure.
He's done so many sequels to movies he didn't direct. So he did Grumpier Old Men. He did The Whole 10 Yards. Yes. He did The Odd Couple 2. So yeah, I think the sequel director, if they ever give him like a Fablemans or like a story about his life, that's what it should be called, Mackenzie. The sequel director.
The sequel director, yes. Oh, or maybe it's just called The Sequel. Anyway.
Sequel, the movie. Ooh.
Yes, we did it. We did it. All right. There. Howard Deutsch is the sequel. So he is, I actually felt like it made so much sense once I looked at his credits, actually. Mm-hmm. Like the vibe of the film and all of that. I was like, yes, this is peak, like 80s wholesome. He's also done a bunch of TV as well, but it was just, it made a lot of sense to me. Also, fun fact, father of Zoe Deutsch. If anybody likes Zoe Deutsch, she's been
Zoe Deutsch Chanel, the one from like New Girl.
Radically different Zoe.
I was like, oh, okay. Interesting.
You just want it to be her, is what it is. But no, different Zoe. She's just been in a lot of, like, I don't know, Netflixy things lately. I feel like she's coming up, okay. And a lot of people might know her name. But anyway, that's her dad. And the writer of this one, Vince McEwen. I don't know much about Vince.
I didn't write any notes by his name because nothing else. I feel like I remember going to his IMDb page and making sure he was still alive because it seemed like he was only in the industry for like 8 years or so. And then he just stopped. So I don't know if he just gave up writing for Phil. He's still alive. So good news, everybody. But he just isn't in the industry anymore from what
I can
tell.
Do you know what it was? Mm. He was a replacement.
Oh, wow. Man. That's going in the Hall of Fame. That's a good clip.
That was good. That was good. I know. I'm very proud. All right. But major cast and crew here is the key. We've got some awesome cast here for such a, I don't know, what we would maybe argue is a B movie, like some pretty great players. Keanu Reeves, obviously, to start, who's been in, I don't know, fucking everything and is a gem of a human also. Let's talk about that. And he's, you know, Mr. Falco. What is it? Footsteps. Footsteps Falco.
Yeah, former Ohio State quarterback, same as his character in Point Break. So are they the same person?
I don't know. Isn't that so funny? I'm so glad you caught that. I was like, have the people seen Point Break? Because same diff. But I love that. He does such a great job in this. And it's one of those just like fun outings for him. As we know, like we know him from, you know, obviously The Matrix and now John Wick, his action guy resurgence or what have you. But I think people forget about Keanu Reeves, that he's done quite the range of films. Like,
he goes in and out of rom-com, straight comedy, all that. Yep.
Yeah. So this is just, this is kind of like a fun outing for him. And fun fact, if you didn't know, this fucker was offered a Baltimore Ravens audition as a result of this movie, which is bananas. Like,
that's how good of an actor it is, it turns out. He actually got a football tryout because of this.
100%. Except his throws are not always his throws, you can tell, because they're like a right-handed throw. But he overall does a really good job. He actually did throw several of these throws, but there are some that you're like, that's definitely a right-handed quarterback, but okay. But anyway, so he's great. We love Keanu Reeves. And then Gene Hackman, also another classic, love him, you know, and he's kind of an homage to the classic football coaches. There's lots of famous older coaches that people may know, you know, like the old Alabama coach whose name escapes me at this moment, of course, but a bunch of folks that he kind of is an homage to. No, not Nick Saban. Predating him, like older, like 50s. No, like 50s-ish. And I know his name. I'm going to regret it later. But anyway, he's like an homage to this type of coach and this era of coach and this kind of what I call the for love of the game coach, right? And he does a great job of it. I love him. I think he's awesome in this.
Yeah, I agree. Gene Hackman's one of those strange actors where I can't, off the top of my head, name a bunch of his films, but I know I've seen him in probably 20 motion pictures over the years. Like, do you have a favorite Gene Hackman role?
I don't know. Oof. Favorite is hard. One of the first ones that pops into my head, weirdly, is Enemy of the State. Do you remember Enemy of the State?
Yes, Will Smith. Will Smith, right? Okay. Yeah. He's one of those weird things where he's clearly a leading man, but in my head, I think of him as more of a character actor. It's very strange.
Well, he's done both. So, like, he did in, like, I would say French Connection. It's like a lead, but a character-y vibe. We did Mississippi Burning is another famous one that I deeply regret forgetting just then. Runaway Jury is another deep cut of his that I really like. He plays an attorney in that one who's, like, very cutthroat. He actually has a similar – it's like if this coach – was a bad guy and a lawyer. Mm. That's who he is in Runaway Jury. Anyway, and he did a Wes Anderson movie. He did
Royal Tenenbaums. Yes. Okay.
Royal Tenenbaums. Yes. Anyway, he has range as well. He does incredible things. And we love Gene Hackman. So excited to see him here. And then we have kind of like a hot mix of characters. Brooke Langton is the head cheerleader, who plays Annabelle. We've got a mix of football team, you know, players who are Orlando Jones, Faison Love, Reese Ifans or Ifans, I'm not sure. John Favreau, obviously incredible.
John Favreau, I on rewatch is my favorite part of this movie.
He's ridiculous.
Again, this is such I mean, he's basically playing the water boy, right? Like he's basically had him saying just like angry and like hitting thing, like not as level, but like
more angry.
Whole when he hits Shane for the second time in practice and he points to his red shirt and he's like, oh yeah, red shirt. Confusing.
Like this is confusing. Am I right? And I love he's like, red shirt means stop. He's like, okay. Yeah. It's
Sorry. One more call out. When he, the first game that they play, when he comes out the tunnel and accidentally levels the cheerleaders, he hits the cheerleaders and then gets up and runs toward the television cameras and pulls the Heisman pose. That
I know.
One of my most, like, I forgot about it. I laughed out loud. It was great.
I actually, it's so funny you say that. I rewound that part back when I rewatched it recently because I was like, wait, what just happened? Because he like ends up in a very strange position and then, all of a sudden he's posing and you're like, wait, give me a second here. But yes, it's hilarious. He does such a great job. And it's, you know, obviously if you know all the things that John has gone on to do, it's a funny role for him for sure. So then we also have Jack Warden, who plays the owner of the team. And I have things to say about him. We'll talk in a minute.
Okay.
But this was his last film. It was
his very last film credit. Yep.
His very last film credit, which is ironic because he said that he's dying in the movie. So, anyway. Art reflecting life. Am I right? And then we have Art LaFleur, who I think is like you recognize him on sight, but you can't place him kind of actor. That was him for me.
For me, too. I was like, where do I know him from? And all the people who wanted us to do The Sandlot last week, he plays Babe Ruth in The Sandlot, the assistant coach in this. And I was like, oh, shit, that's right. So there you go. You got your little Sandlot fix until we actually do the actual movie.
You got your Sandlot teaser. Yeah. You're welcome.
Yes. You got your grain of sand, if you will. Right. The only other one that I wanted to call out was, I think it's David Denman or Denneman, and this was his first film role, and he would go on to be on The Office, and he played Roy, so Office heads out there. This is his first movie role.
I love The Office, but I need an Office rewatch. That's awesome. Great call.
We all need an Office rewatch. Let's be honest here.
I think so. Okay, the last two I want to call out, there are a bunch, by the way, guys, like there are a bunch of great little characters in here and I may have missed some, but the last two that I think need an honorable mention are John Madden and Pat Summerall,
Crazy that they got them for this.
And like we see that more now, I think, where they get real people to do things like Wolf Blitzer has been in a bunch of movies and been a real CNN commentator and things like that. But it's back then, I feel like that wasn't that common. Maybe I'm just misremembering because I was younger. I don't know. It didn't seem like that happened that often.
I think it was rare. I'm reminded of, I think it was the first Creed movie where they got two of my favorites, Tony Kornheiser and Michael Wilbon, who do the ESPN show Pardon the Interruption.
Mm.
And they've both been doing that shit for like 30 years, but they got them in Creed. And I don't think you get that if you didn't have John Madden and Pat Summerall in this. And it gives the movie like more of a legitimacy.
Yeah, it brings some authenticity to their roles, to the script, it feels like. It doesn't feel forced. Like, they're not those, like when Nick Saban guest starred on The Blind Side, another great football movie, by the way, he was such an actor. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't mean it in a bad way. Like, he's a coach trying to say a few lines. But you could feel that it felt fake a little bit, and he did his best, but you were just like, ugh, he's such a coach. But this didn't feel like they were acting. It really did feel like they're calling a game. So that was a nice throwback for me, especially like rest in peace, John Madden. We haven't gotten to hear him call a game in a minute. So that was a nice, that was a fun experience for me for a hot minute there. So that was cool.
Yeah. The only other one that I want to call out, and this sort of ties into one of the first things that I wanted to say about the plot itself, is Archie Harris, who plays Wilson Carr, who's sort of the religious pastor priest character in this. So the reason I want to shout him out is he had actually played in the NFL as a replacement player in 1987, which is the scenario that this entire movie plot is based on. So he played as a replacement. He would actually go on to lose in the Super Bowl to the team that this is loosely based around. I thought that was pretty interesting that they cast an ex-football player replacement to be in a movie called The Replacements about replacements. Go figure.
That is cool. Nice segue into our plot summary, by the way, which is, ready for it, guys?
You should tell them where you got this plot summary first. Where'd you get this from?
Okay, so I wanted to give you guys a plot summary, so I gave it a Goog, and I went to the IMDb's, and I was like, they have good succinct plot summaries, and boy, do they ever, because this one is, during a pro football strike, the owners hire substitute players.
And scene.
And scene. Elfine. That's it. That's all you get. So I was a little surprised by how succinct this one was, but really it does get to the heart of it. So there's that, I guess. But anyway, yeah, he's a replacement player. They are all replacement players. And this movie, the first thing that stood out to me, just moving right into the plot, so 2000s.
Like, yeah.
It is. Again, it came out in 2000. And we're in the first 30 seconds. And the first thing I said out loud was, this is so 2000s.
You got the first lit, song. Ziploc bag playing.
Ziploc by Lit. The whole look of it. Like, the song, by the way, is really juxtaposed against him, like, rolling up on his boat in this very chill situation. And you're like, this song,
both
the lyrics kind of fit, but the, like, the sound of it doesn't fit. And anyway, it's very like 10 Things I Hate About You opening, like very 2000s. It was hilarious. But I also love immediately you get, you know, Shane Falco's on his houseboat. He's doing his, you know, whatever thing after he hasn't played in a while. You don't know all the background yet. But what immediately happens is he's scraping barnacles off of a boat, because of course he is. That's his.
As you do when you own a boat.
Yeah. As you do. And, you know, that's his side. Well, you know, that's his side gig. This is how he makes money now. Is he just barnacles boats, I should say. And he finds we have to dig into this. He finds his own trophy at the bottom of the water. And he is surprised, by the way, by finding said trophy that says All-American Shane Falco. And he's like, wait, what the fuck is that? And he goes,
maybe it was like a drunken stupor and he got angry at his missing fruit over that.
I 100% believe that. But you live on a houseboat. So like it surprises you that it's in the water. I don't know why. And also, you clearly go down there to de-barnacle boats on the reg. This is your first experience. I don't know. Maybe this happened last night. Who knows? But
maybe
he definitely has discovered his drunken rage at his own trophy. But it's so wholesome because he immediately grabs it and like fakes this whole play.
Does a whole play. Doesn't drown somehow. He's down there for like 2.5 minutes. But Shane Falco can hold his breath a long time, ladies. I don't know what that means, but it sounded cool.
Something good, I think. Yeah. But it was just so adorable. I don't know why. It was just that whole little scene of him discovering that and finding it and having a little role play with himself. I thought it was super cute.
Yeah. Sets the tone for his character. Like I said, a very mellow, like lighthearted dude. And he's down there having fun, goofing off, showing off for nobody in particular. That's Shane Falco in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Feels right. But, you know, the whole crux of the matter is, just to give a little bit deeper dive on the plot, is, you know, these rich, you know, spoiled, not for love of the game players, as I would probably say, are, you know, trying to renegotiate their contracts. Again, to Lamar's point, this is based loosely, very loosely, but it is based loosely on the 1987 NFLPA strike that did happen. Mm-hmm. And they're just fighting for some more money, right? And so the first thing that happens at the top is you see this conversation from the Washington Sentinel ownership, which is potentially the Washington Redskins. And you see them figuring out, hey, we have to be able to continue the season somehow. You know, how are we going to continue the season? We need new players, and trying to bring in a replacement team, replacement coach, all the things. And Shane Falco is obviously brought in as our first prospect, the quarterback.
You can't win the game without the quarterback. And I thought it was interesting how much this has changed over time. It's fairly accurate, as you said, you know, but I feel like at this point, everybody knows that football players, yeah, they're playing for love of the game, but they wouldn't do it if they weren't getting paid. I feel like
to their credit, it's a high risk game, you know?
Seen that. We're more familiar, I think, with that now of the consequences of playing football. But even with that, I wanted to point out that I thought it was funny watching this inflation with Martell says, you know, $5 million might sound like a lot of money, but it's not. the high. So he is apparently, we hear later, the best quarterback in the league, and he's making $5 million a year. Currently, the worst starting quarterback in the NFL is making $5 million a year. The not best, but the highest paid quarterback this coming year is Joe Burrow on the Cincinnati Bengals. He's making $55 million. So again, inflation is a thing, y'all.
Inflation is a thing. The point is about these players, these wealthy, whatever, affluent, successful players, is like they have quote unquote lost sight of what is important. You know, that's the whole shtick from Jack Warden's character who plays the owner, where he's like, you know, these spoiled players, these spoiled brats who just don't want to, they're being, what does he say? He says something like, does he call them? I want to say bitches, but I think it's probably something worse. But anyway, he's making fun of how wimpy they are and whiny they are and all these things. And that they just don't want to go out there and just play football. And my immediate reaction.
Go ahead.
My immediate reaction to that is like, bitch, you're in it for the money too. Like, yeah. I don't. You're an NFL owner. You're not here. This is not a nonprofit. Like,
no,
like, let's cut
bullshit.
You're
getting your tax breaks from the state. We know how this works. But
yeah,
I was going to say that the way that they show us that Martell doesn't love the game or whatever or isn't competitive is him sliding to avoid a tackle. That's like the first we see of him. And the coach is like criticizing him, or the owner's criticizing him. But nowadays, that's what quarterbacks are supposed to do to avoid injury and prolong their careers. So it's crazy to, again, 24 years, what a difference it makes.
Well, and I think it's something too back then that it was like, you just show that grit, you know, that extra grit. And they just definitely thought he was a wimp, which, don't get me wrong, in all these other ways, he demonstrates throughout the film how much he sucks. So no argument there. But yeah, not for that reason, not because he's protecting his head, God forbid.
Yeah. So then we jump into sort of all of the different cast of characters. As you said, Falco's sort of their first get of wanting a quarterback who can lead, not just a quarter, but a leader for the team. Mm-hmm. And then we get this insane cast of characters that we sort of mentioned before. And I like the little cutaways of showing what they're doing in their day jobs before they get, again, this movie just does that very well. It's like very, there's not, for it being 2 hours long, there's not a lot of downtime. There's not a lot of dragging scenes. It's just beat to beat to beat to beat.
Yeah, you almost notice it more when you, on a rewatch, I think, where, especially where you're, like we have before our pods, you know, we're taking notes, we're trying to pay attention. I feel like I'm paying closer attention than when I'm just watching something casually. And I was like, damn, this moves fast. Like, I remember thinking that, like, this is a hustle. And, but I love the intro into, you know, Clifford's background, and he's running after the robber of the convenience store. And he's just like speeding past him casual. It's like, give me that Twinkie back, you know? And he's not only can he not catch the Twinkie, he steps on it, you know? And so you're like, ooh, this is going to make for a great receiver. Let's go.
Yeah.
And then the leg who has this
great nickname.
What a great nickname. And then Falco, where they're like footsteps Falco. Weirdly, I've seen this movie a handful of times and I never registered his nickname until this time. But I don't feel like correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like I don't notice a lot of homage to the actual nickname throughout. Like,
no, I don't know why they call him that. I mean, my guess would be the fact that they call out that he scrambles well later on, because when Martell does eventually come back to the team for like half a game, he, like, his players give him shit because he just gets sacked. And he's like, try scrambling a little bit. So that would be my thought, was maybe Shane's just really good at eluding tackles and running around. I don't know.
Yeah, I assume so. Got to be something like that. They don't spend a lot of time on it, but it's a cute nickname. Nice alliteration. We'll take it.
I like that. That's what you took away. It's like, here's the football reason from Lamar, and then Mackenzie thinks it's cute. So,
okay, first of all, rude. I fucking love football, and I can throw my football references with the best of them. But I didn't think it made sense in context, actually. Anyway, but I am also an English nerd who will take an alliteration all day, every day. So here we go. But what I also felt for him, for Falco, was, you know, he has this one game. He has this Sugar Bowl game that he is famous for, but not in the way you want to be, right? He's infamous for losing by 45 points. Everyone who gets the opportunity to points this out to him throughout the film. and they tell him everything that's wrong with it. And then he has this interaction with Jimmy McGinty, who is Gene Hackman's character, who's going to come in as the new coach and is trying to recruit everyone. And Falco's the least interested, weirdly enough.
Right.
And he's trying to convince him, and he has this whole speech, and he tells him, you know, all these spiels. And this is one of my complaints that doesn't hang up, hold up to this day, is talking about the game and how rough it is on your body. And Falco says back to him, well, like, I have 3 concussions to prove it, you know, that was a brutal game. And Gene Hackman says, that's why girls don't play the game. And I have in my notes in all caps, ew, ew. That is some bullshit. I know some bad bitches. I am not the person. We've talked about my accent in the past. I'm not going to go out there and play football, although I'm pretty good at a football toss. I'm not going to go play a high contact sport. But there are some strong, badass women that I know who could go out there and have not only a great time, but crush some shit if they were given the opportunity to play football. So I just don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. We don't play football because it's not widely accepted. Same thing as baseball with League of Their Own, whatever. It's just not something that's, you know, given, women are given that opportunity. It's not because they're not capable, and it's not because they're not willing to take a hit and get a concussion. Fuck you very much, Jimmy McGinty. Okay.
So my high school had a female football player, just one, but we did have a female on the football team. She wasn't like, I know a lot of high schools tend to have female kickers and things like that. But she played defense. She was out there taking hits, giving hits and whatnot. All that to say that there are girls out there that love to play football and can play football.
And also, I think, like, you definitely, there's a difference too between, like, I'll play a flag football game all day long, but if you want to full blown, you know, tackle each other, no argument. Like, there's not going to be every single woman that's into that, but there are a lot of women who are and are capable and all the things. So I will say that was one that didn't land for me, but it's still, I get the point. I get what he's saying.
I thought you were going to be mad about the fact that he said he got 3 concussions in one game, but they're asking him to come back and play again. I'm equally mad about the women thing, but I was like, oh shit, I forgot about that line.
I am also concerned about that. You're right. You're right. It's kind of like, you know, and they actually say something later where she comes to the houseboat to talk to him, and she's like asking him how he's doing after the bar fight slash game where he took a beating. And he's like, it's all kind of running together into one big beating. And I'm like, you okay, Falco? You okay? You doing all right? It feels like maybe not. It feels like you are currently concussed.
Maybe the writer had some deep philosophical message he was trying to give us about safety in athletics, and we just weren't able to read between the lines in the year 2000.
Yeah, maybe he really had, it was the foreshadowing for us. He's like, you're all going to get here. I'm already here, but you're all going to get here.
There's also that line of Martell's that was a big takeaway, and I'm sure this was said before this movie, but I love that line of, you're not even a has-been, you're a never was. That's a quality insult right there to somebody who's in athletics or like a celebrity or actor, whatever it might be, you know?
That's a Mighty Ducks reference, my friend.
Really? First one?
Yeah.
Oh, because of Bombay? Okay.
Yeah, it's a classic. It's a classic. But there are several in here like that are like homages to other quotes, and that is one of them. But yeah, I do like that one. I mean, I hate him, obviously, but I do like that one. It's pretty clever. Another quote that I like while we're on quotes is from Jimmy McGinty. I just roasted him a minute ago, so I feel like I need to
say something about who else can't play football.
No, I'm going to throw him a bone. This is a fun one. He says, you know what separates the winners and the losers, kid? And it's funny because Falco comes back and he's like, the score, obviously.
Yeah,
but it's wrong. Which is number one, accurate. Okay. But number two is just funny. He comes back with, he's like, no, man, like it's the going back and trying again. It's like not getting hit and not getting back up, right? It's the getting hit, it didn't go well, and you get back up and you try again. But I like that whole interaction with them because it does. It's very indicative of both of their characters. Again, if you accept this movie for what it is, Gene Hackman is like the cheesy, you know, the cheesy coach who gives you all the one-liners and, you know, it gets, you know, waxes philosophical about how the game impacts your life and all that. And it's just, this is the beginning of that for them and their relationship. And it's kind of cute.
Yeah. Yeah. I like a lot of their interactions I found throughout rewatching it. it has more heart than I think I gave it credit for. I always knew it was a fun, goofy, silly film, but there are some good little nuggets here of inspiration. I agree with that.
Yeah. But you know what's not great? Not great nuggets. There's a lot of great, like, not great bullying that's happening, which I think is part of what you were alluding to at the top of, like, the way they make fun of each other is so inappropriate and so insensitive. And, like, this is when they haven't bonded as a team yet, of course. They're, like, all clashing and they don't get each other yet and all that. But they say some shit. And I was just like, guys, this is so inappropriate and not... It's the like Chinaman reference, the like they're making fun of people being fat. They're like just all these things that they are just roasting the shit out of each other. And it's intense from minute one when they're all together.
Yeah, you can say what you want about it. It's the year 2000 and it's, you know, maybe it's locker talk, quote unquote, of I'm sure that not just back then, but probably right now in, you know, a locker room around the country, there's some dudes on the same team that are using shit like that. But there's some slurs thrown in there, you know, African-American slurs and Welsh or Irish slurs, you know, mixing him up with the Welsh guy and whatnot. So there's a lot that doesn't age well as far as that goes, where I cringed a little bit of just, but yeah. If you change it, like the situation, I don't think I was as anti-bullying because I get that they're trying to establish that the team doesn't like each other and that there's tension there. But I think if the script was written today, they would make it a little less low-hanging fruit. They'd actually have to try and make it a little more clever.
Yeah. It'd be less like playground insults. It would be like, I have to try a little harder. And it's definitely the playground insults of it all, I think, for sure. And I like literally have in my notes, I was like, these adult man children. Like, it was just their actual children. But you know what does age great? Mr. fucking Falco's glamour shot run onto the field, which again, I think it's just... such a one, it's glorious because obviously, but two, you're like, this is so this movie, and like, this is the shtick. Like, we're gonna have this like slow-mo wind in the hair run onto the field glamour shot, you know, moment for
fog machine running during the middle of practice. Sure, why not? And I love that he shows up like an hour. They've already all been out there sweating their asses off. And then he's like, here's your leader. And he's like, I'm late because of traffic. He probably would have been cut.
And let's be honest. He says car trouble. And the car trouble is that they tipped his truck in the parking lot. He was already there.
He was already.
He could just walk. I just remember being like, that is a bullshit excuse, sir.
Now, speaking of things that didn't age well, I want to ask a question to you, Mackenzie. Does this movie pass the Bechdel test? Are you sure?
I would imagine no, but at the same time, I haven't done the test.
It is two women having a conversation that does not have to revolve around men, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't say they have to be intelligent women. The one girl who can't formulate a sentence, they're still talking about other things.
There's two or three phases to the Bechdel test, actually. But yes, that is one of the core ones. And yeah, the strippers are not, they're not talking about the men that much is true. And by strippers, I mean cheerleaders, obviously.
Dancers. That's a catch-all, you know.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Doesn't she say that? Like, if you have any other dancers or down at the club, send them on down.
I like when she says I love your style of dance. And she's like, is lap dance a style? Like, and then when the girl, I will say like, as again, hasn't aged great, but I love when the girl says, oh, I forgot to tell you something. And then just has this blank stare into nowhere for 10 seconds. She's like, oh, she does that all the time. That's actually pretty funny.
She's like, yeah, she just zones out and can't process thoughts, no big deal. But they are one of the funnier parts of the film because the cheerleaders are also replacements. But what is hilarious about that to me is that one, Annabelle stays on and clearly has been the head cheerleader regardless. Apparently she's not striking, whatever. Two, cheerleaders make shit. She does actually say that in this film, which I was like waiting for to hear whether or not they were going to address that. Because like cheerleaders make now, even now, like with inflation, it's like $100 a game. They make shit. And like, it's crazy because if you think, for example, of Dallas, like the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders are like half of the famous part of the team, right? Like people come and watch these incredible dancers, admittedly, who are also cheering for these teams. And so, yeah, they get paid shit. So, yeah, it's no surprise to me that they're like, let me strip on the side. Let me run a bar on the side, all these things. Mm-hmm. And but my thought out loud was, you will make more money stripping. What are you? Why are we here? You're not able to get tips off of this. But they are full blown stripping on the sidelines. Almost. They're dancing in provocative ways. And I just feel for them that they didn't get any tips out of it because, you know, they were doing the work. They were doing the work.
It's very, yeah, that whole thing, it's very 2000s. I think this was, there, women have always watched football and loved football, but this is, again, a film of an era where we're like, this is a dude thing.
Only so, dudes like, watch football.
We need to put hot chicks in this too to like, you know, give them something else to what, like, it got weird for me when they were cutting to the cheerleaders during one of the games, and it wasn't even a, like, there's times where the cheerleaders become a plot point where they're distracting the other team and whatever it might be. But there's one game where the other team's getting their ass, or they're getting their ass kicked, but it just keeps giving these random shots of the cheerleaders dancing sexy. And it's, mm-hmm. It's just like, okay, you're kind of talking down to me and saying like, here, look at this, right. Because this,
emotional this is what's thing gonna interest
isn't very fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So have mm-hmm. some fun with this instead. Yeah.
Okay, but you know what we do have fun with in this is their tryouts. That's my bring it on note of the, like, this is bring it on all over again. Yeah. Or obviously the homage from Bring It On is to this because, oh my God, the tryouts are hilarious. There's like this one like goth-ish kind of girl who is just, yeah, it's just angry and sad. And then, but like then flips up her skirt at the end and that's it. She's like, I did it. And then there's another one who is like trying to pun cheer her way through it. I thought you would love her. She was punning
it up. All
she really
wants is a quarterback. I like her. It's funny you say the bring it on thing because I actually mixed up. There was one girl in this who does a cheer. And when we were watching Bring It On, I was like, oh, what happened to that? Did that get cut from the movie? And it was I was thinking of this movie. So mystery mm-hmm. solved.
There you go. That's what it is. We have come full circle. This was meant to be. But yeah. So yeah, she just wants a quarterback. But speaking of quarterbacks, Mr. Falco is hitting on the head cheerleader is the point. But what my note about this is that one, she definitely eyeballs him, right? Like the glamour shot did it for her, right? The run onto the field. She was like, ooh, hey, okay.
Yeah.
Respect. I get it. His hair looked great. But she's flirting with him, whatever, no big deal. She takes him back to his houseboat, drops him off. He, in a very respectful way, asks her out, you know, and she's like, no. Here's my boundary. I don't date football players. And he's like, not even quarterbacks, which so smooth, Keanu. And she's like, no, especially not quarterbacks, what have you. And he's such a good dude about it. I just have to call that out. We have to recognize non-problematic men when we see them, which is like he takes it in stride and is like, cool, thanks so much for the ride.
I mean, to be fair, Mackenzie, it wouldn't have been much of a plot if he had just been like, well, then fuck you. It's like, oh, well, now I don't care about Falco anymore 20 minutes into the movie.
Fair. But listen, we're trying to teach men also simultaneously what is a good move, right?
Okay. So you're saying let's recognize what happened in this moment as opposed to the story in the movie. I hear you. Okay.
Let's just recognize some good behavior. That's all I'm saying. This is good behavior. We appreciate this behavior. Anyway, but yes, excellent plot point. He handles this well. So she now has no reason to be upset with him or what have you. But what I will say about this that comes full circle is that she immediately breaks her own boundaries. She's like, sets this hard boundary and is like, I'm not into you. I don't date football players, whatever. Yeah. And I will totally call her out for immediately being like very concerned with everything Shane Falco mm-hmm. went, watching him very closely and like wanting him to look at her on the field and, you know, and then inviting him places or asking if he needs another ride and then rubbing. Was it yams? I think it was yams on his shoulder. Remember when he's like, as a shoulder injury?
Oh my God. Is that what was happening there?
I think it's a sweet yam is what I recall her saying. Like something, yams are involved is what I'm saying. And she's like, this really reduces inflammation. And she
Is there turmeric in yams or is that just a spice? Because I know they're both orange.
I think that's just a spice. I think that's just the spice.
That was where my thought went, because I take turmeric for inflammation in my knee. So I thought, oh, maybe they're both orange. Maybe it is for inflammation.
Maybe they're both orange because they're both anti-inflammatory.
That's okay. I'm gonna. So everything orange is anti-inflammatory. You heard it here first. We're now a health podcast. Anybody can do that now. Joe Rogan does it, so we can do it too.
Yeah.
Eat more orange things.
Feels like science. orange equals anti-inflammatory. Anyway, yams. She rubs it straight up on him. Is what I'm saying. She is deeply hitting on him, basically immediately.
But I thought that, and so because you got me there, here's, I'm going to jump forward a little bit because I was super fucking confused later in the movie when Martell says to Falco after he takes his job back, he says, she deserves better.
Okay.
The cheerleader.
Actual fuck. What in the actual.
And there's been.
You've had
they
no
haven't
influence.
Even talked to each other the whole movie, right?
There's so, got to be a deleted scene.
Exactly. So apparently, I don't know if this is for sure, but like when I Googled, because I Googled it, I was that curious of just, did I miss something? I don't even remember them being in a scene together. And apparently this article from 2000, when this came out, it was a movie review and said specifically, we're thinking that they left some scenes on the cutting room floor because there should have been a subplot of him being this girl's ex. And that is tying into what you're saying, which is, maybe because of him, she no longer dates football players and especially not quarterbacks.
That is 100% my takeaway. I totally agree, which would then mean that she had an affair with him because I'm pretty sure he's supposed to be married, which is a whole other. I think that's why it's cut is what I'm saying. I think it's cut because it makes her look bad that she had an affair with the married guy. But I do assume that that's a subplot. But that whole scene could have happened without that portion of the conversation and been as just as impactful. Mm-hmm. But I think it then doesn't allow for him kind of standing her up, right? Because otherwise you don't quite understand why he would stand her up if you don't give him the little nugget of insecurity of don't drag her down with you, da 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 da. Because he's proven himself, at least to this point, to like not be the guy who's going to just not show up and be a dick about it or whatever. But he stands her up on the date. And it is the one flaw that he shows the whole time. And I will say also the one flaw that she also shows is that he shows up at the game, mid-game, after all this has happened. And she just is kind of cool with it. And like, that's not it. Like, again, there's a whole subplot happening here that either wasn't fleshed out in the movie or they just think it reconciles because she's just supposed to get it. She's supposed to get that, you know, Martell came back and Falco was so upset and he just vanished for a hot minute because of that. And like, I don't know. I'm like, I don't really care. Like, great. You had a rough night. Like, you don't ditch me and say zero words about it. You know,
if I were looking to my heart says it's just poor script writing or things being
cut like for
from
writing
the script
editing,
that makes
poor,
it incomplete. But if I wanted to excuse the purpose behind it, I guess I could say, well, if he thinks he's played his last game there and he's never going to be in the stadium again and see her again, and he wants to do that thing of just like, I'm going to break your heart so bad that you're never going to want to see me again or talk to me again. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to stand you up. And like, that's him not wanting to, you know, thinking she does deserve better and he's a piece of shit. Like, I could see how that might have been what they intended there. And then because he goes back to the team. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is silly that we've had this guy, like, couldn't he have just texted her and been like, we can't be together? Like, instead of just standing
listen,
up for dinner.
This is 2000. So like, let's acknowledge the technology limitations.
Could he have AOL instant
time?
Messaged her and said, right.
Could he have
we're
aimed
not meant
her
to be together?
And then put like an emo song lyric as his away message. And then it would have all made sense. It would have all made sense.
I'm trying she to pick a winner, but yeah, that's
she would have totally gotten it. She would have totally gotten it, you know.
That but is just like an emo kid on AM2 to break a girl's heart, but then put up an emo song lyric themselves as if they're the ones that got hurt. That's Lamar in the year 2000.
Broken.
Oh god. Yeah.
You're like, oh, the nostalgia of it all. It takes me back. I love it. But no, they're cute, it's sweet, whatever. But I don't love that for her, but I agree with you. I think it's just shitty editing, shitty writing, whatever. Mm-hmm. But one of the things, this completely unrelated nugget, but well, not unrelated, but we skipped over this nugget that we just have to address, which is the team getting jailed for the bar fight. Like, that is one of the best scenes in the whole movie of they are just at their bar, like the bar, handling their shit, just having minding their own business, having a drink. And you can fucking tell these multi-million dollar players are unemployed because all they have
to do
all day is just hang out together and show up everywhere that their nemeses are. And it's so ridiculous. It's embarrassing. And they show up everywhere.
NFL players have fucking families and shit to do.
It's
funny. I did laugh at that same thing of like, they're just spending every day hanging out together. That's
not
cool.
Only
they're
are
best
they
friends.
Hanging, they're not only are they hanging out, they're in parking lots, they're in bars, they're also tailgating the game that they're boycotting. Like, can we talk about that? That they literally tailgate? And I'm like, you realize you're the biggest fans right now. You're in the parking lot. You can't even watch the game. And you are tailgating in the parking lot. You're ridiculous. But
I love the bar fight. I love the, you can't have a movie from like this between probably 10 to 15 years before this and 5 to 10 years after this. You couldn't have like a scene in a bar without having a bar fight of some kind. And I love that it has the stereotypical dragging the guy along the bar top. Like,
I'm so glad you said that.
Gotta have it.
I was totally going to say, I wasn't going to say stereotypical, but I was going to say that's my favorite moment of him just like, I feel like it's because he's trying to mind his own business and then he gets interrupted with his Hennessy and he's like, hey, I was having a drink and now I'm going to fuck you up. And yeah, he just drags him across the bar. It's so glorious. But I love that it's all up against, obviously, you know, they're having this conflict and they didn't start it. And these people are pieces of shit. But then they get jailed. They get sent to jail and all these wealthy players get let off the hook. But it's such a
There's
bonding
a metaphor
experience.
There.
Oh,
some kind of social. I don't know what it is, but
there's some kind of comment being made. I'm not sure, but it's definitely the comment is, I think, team bonding. I think it's team bonding because they.
And that's what brings them together.
They all end up in this cell together and it's an important bonding moment for them. And they all dance IRL to I Will Survive by our dear Gloria Gaynor. And it is one of the best scenes. Like it's a beautiful scene. It independent of this movie. It is just in movie scenes, a beautiful, fun scene that bonds these guys. And even Keanu Reeves' character, who I think is like the more chill and all of that, but maybe is a little bit like Keanu, I don't know. You can tell it like takes him a minute to get into it, you know what I mean? Like he's kind of like, he kind of has to be coerced, and that's when you know you've got it right. Like when the wallflower is like, fuck it, I'm gonna come in and I'm gonna dance this song and I'm just dance my little heart out, that's how you know that the real bonding is happening, the real moment is happening, and he joins in, and that was it. Like, it's adorable.
Sometimes leaders gotta lead, and sometimes leaders gotta follow.
Yes.
That's just me trying to give inspirational quotes like Gene Hackman in our podcast, so that might be something he might say if he were here. I also like, and I noticed this time, was they're doing the electric slide. Like, it's a pretty easy four-step dance that they're doing in this scene. And then they do it
for grown-ass men to do.
Well, I was
going to
say, because they do it in this scene and they do it at the very end of the film. And like, as the credits are coming up, and Rhys Ifans from Wales cannot seem to get this. He's looking at the other players to see what he's supposed to do next. And I'm like, how do you, but, and then I was like, oh, he grew up in Wales. Maybe they didn't do the electric slide there.
He's also not the only one. Like, so if you, especially the last one, like the jail scene, I feel like they worked on a little bit better. But the end zone scene, I don't know if it was shot first or if the vibes were different. I don't know. But they were so much worse in the end zone celebration than they were in the jail cell. They were so off of each other. But I actually think it adds something cute to the whole vibe of
it makes it feel more authentic, I suppose, of a moment. Because if it looked perfectly choreographed, like Bring It On, then let's just watch Bring It On again, because that's like my third Bring It On reference this episode.
What we have learned from this pod is that you love that movie. Like, you love that movie. We didn't realize we're all learning together. But I love, the other thing I think is like, we have to spend a minute on Jimmy McGinty as a whole. He has some great quotes. He's that, again, that like wholesome coach vibes. But I love when he sends Bateman on the hunt for the ball. And he's like, give me the ball. And they get so hyped up together. And like, it's so peak sports. I love it. And he goes, he gets it, he comes back. But like, he runs at him and he like runs out onto the field and he goes, I hope he doesn't kill somebody. And he just says it with like kind of sincerity of like, yeah. I might have just sent him out to murder someone. I don't 100% know. And then he also has this other great quote about, don't do anything great in sports if you can't handle the congratulations. I love that about him. He's like, because they were talking about how when you're super successful, you have this great moment, people pounce on you or lose their minds on you or what have you. And I thought this just came full circle in this movie of people are getting hurt. They're breaking shit. They're getting, you know, water thrown on them. They're like having these great big moments, but the congratulations are intense. And I love him as a coach. He's such a good contribution to the whole thing.
Yeah, he's fun. I love how he just always seems to have his players' backs. As I said, I love his heart-to-hearts with Falco. And yeah, that interaction is very funny. I was going to point out, when you were talking about that, I'm not a big, like, as I'm researching for our episodes, you know, I'll look up little trivia and fun facts about the movie and stuff. I'm not big on looking up goofs and things that were wrong or because I'm not big on spotting those. But I did laugh when I was just looking through it out of curiosity. I'm not going to call any of them out. But apparently there's 3 to 4 different scenes in this of a play happening on the field and then it cutting to the sidelines and the player who's making the play on the field is like applauding for themselves.
He's on this.
So I'm like, that's pretty funny. Yeah.
Yeah. That almost feels intentional if it's that frequent, you know?
Yeah, it might be, So yeah, not a big blooper guy, but I thought that was funny that multiple times the person who's making the play is like cheering for themselves on the sideline.
I definitely don't recon bloopers. Like I don't look them up, but yeah. I definitely take a lot of pride in finding them because I will. Well, which like in this one, again, the throw, the passes from Falco, like there is a difference between a right-handed throw and a left-handed throw. Like the spin is literally different. And so there are multiple passes that he throws that are right-handed passes. And he's a lefty quarterback. So
I think you just mansplained spirals to me, but I actually was learning something. I was like, oh, I never thought about it that the ball would spin a different direction. So thank you, Mackenzie.
I think I've peaked as a woman if I just mansplained football to a man.
I don't think you should say that. I don't think that's what women should aim to be. Like, I just peaked as a woman because I did something men do. That's a bad lesson.
Because I mansplained a sport to a man. That feels fucking incredible, and I'm proud of myself. So thank you. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Well, all that to say, like, there's so many great things, but I think the end of this movie is one of the things I really do like is that they play their little hearts out and they have this last. So the whole goal, if you don't remember from the film, is that they have to win 3 out of 4 games to make the playoffs on behalf of the Sentinels. Right. That's the shtick. And they lost their first game. But by the skin of their teeth, honestly, they actually showed
came
up
down
midway.
The last play.
Down the last play. And they come in as replacement players. Like, this is unheard of. Like, I'm a Patriots fan, and if anybody's paid attention to the Patriots season this year, you know that it was fucking brutal, and not a one of them was a replacement player. So it is incredibly impressive that 3 out of 4 games they won. They won is replacement players in a short period of time. You've bonded as a team. You've memorized the playbook. You have figured out the calls. You have worked with new coaches and you have won 3 out of 4 games. That is impressive. But I think what's super cool about this is they go into this last game, just again, to Jimmy McGinty's quote throughout the movie, it's like with all the heart of like, this is they're playing like it's their last game and like their life depends on it because that's it. This truly is
no tomorrow.
And like, how different would that make it for other players and other coaches and other teams if you really did know that it was your last game? And I love thinking about that in this context because I do think this really truly contributes to how well they play and how they end up winning and getting the Sentinels to the playoffs, even though they don't get to play in that game. And I think that's super cool.
Yeah. You got my wheels turning on like all these different semi-related sports quotes, mostly from movies and whatnot. But I like that one. There was the scene in this where they put the stick'em on Orlando Jones' hands just to like help him catch the ball. And I'm like, well, that's pulled directly out of Little Giants. But there's another good quote in there of him talking about like Rick Moranis's character talking about like, you know, you might beat us 99 times out of 100. We just have to win this one. Like, that's what's like, if we beat you once, that tarnishes your entire record. So I think the one that you just said about this movie is fairly like that. No tomorrow. Like, we're literally just playing for today. If we beat you guys, then that's awesome. Because if we lose, it doesn't matter. If we win, it doesn't matter. But yeah.
Okay, but the quote I thought you were going to mention was the, I look like I just jacked off an elephant.
I thought you were referencing Little Giants at first, and I was like, what the fuck movie did you watch? Good
definitely
God.
Definitely where I thought you were going with that, I'm not going to lie. But speaking of the best quotes, I love when they get in the huddle, though, and Falco's like, listen, this is it. This is the fucking game. I would love to say something inspirational and great, but like, that's not our vibe. Let's just admit it. It's not our vibe. And so he says, pain heals, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. And I fucking love that. I want that to be my toast for the rest of my life. Like, I think that's just so fun and silly, and it's so great. It's so great for this. And they're, again, it just contributes to the, they're playing like there's no tomorrow vibes. And it's just like given zero fucks. And I love that for them.
Yeah. Yeah. This, I love the way that this, again, we talked about how the film plays out, how the story just keeps chugging along. It doesn't let up. I mean, we didn't have time today to spend on every little thing of the team really like having that first game where they're just, they hate each other and then they bond, as we said, and then they play a couple more games before we get to sort of this conclusion. But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in here. It keeps moving. I did want to shout out from what you said about, you know, this doesn't typically happen. So what this was based on, as we said it to start, is the 1986 Redskins. And I'm going to apologize now because I hate that name just as much as everybody else. I'm not.
It's the worst.
It was the name at the time. So again, apologies. It was the name. Like that term. But their replacement players went 3-0 in the games they had to fill in, which helped the Redskins to make the playoffs, similar to this movie. And then they won the Super Bowl that year. And the owners refused to recognize the replacement players as part of that team. So they never got Super Bowl rings despite helping them to win three games. It wasn't until, it has a happy ending, 2018, that they were actually given Super Bowl rings, which is kind of cool. It's 18 years after this movie even came out. But it's nice to know that they eventually got their Super Bowl rings.
And they fucking deserved it because, like, you don't uphold that record on their behalf, on the behalf of the team, then they don't get to go to the playoffs. They don't get to the Super Bowl. Like, that is just such a big thing. And I get it and I don't get it. You know what I mean? Why they would try to withhold that. But yeah, I'm so glad to hear that they got it. I didn't know that. That's an awesome factoid. But also, sidebar, can we talk about how their new name sucks? Like, I hated the Redskins. The obviously, Commanders. Let's change it. But the Commanders, like, ugh. Do better.
I actually better. Was, I, even though I hate, what was the owner's name? I know he just got ousted. Dan Snyder, I want to say, might have been his name.
I think it's Snyder, yeah.
Yeah, but and he was a piece of garbage, but I did love the spitefulness of just saying, well, we're just going to call our team the Washington Football Team for like 2 or 3 years. I was, as somebody who is equally spiteful and sort of like, well, I don't like doing things people tell me to do. I thought that was a pretty baller move, but yeah, the Commander, I don't know.
No, it's pretty terrible. I'm not impressed at all. But anyway, the Sentinels, however, sure, I can get behind that. But I'm very happy that they made the playoffs with the replacements. I'm not happy that Martell gets to just come back, do his typical shit. I do love that they carried him out of the locker room and told him to fuck off. So that's super satisfying. And then it's super satisfying that, you know, Falco like gets the girl at the end and at least there's that. But I have one bone to pick. One bone to pick because McGinty tells him at the beginning, hey, you're still young. You're a great quarterback. And when the man that you and this is an amalgamation of quotes, so bear with me. But when the man that you are versus the man that you want to be come together, you're going to be a great football player.
You jerk off an elephant. You said it was an amalgamation of quotes.
Obviously, then the next phase of that is that you jerk off an elephant and you win a Super Bowl. All right. So you assume he's going to make this great progress, whatever. But this is very much treated as like the end of his story.
A swan song. Yeah. Yeah.
Very much a swan song. And I was like, listen, he just proved that in four games, he can make a hack job of a football team turn into a winning team. Like this guy not getting another shot in the pros is kind of shocking to me. And I know that that's not the point of this movie, but I just feel like he dangled this carrot. And then at the end, we forget about this carrot entirely. And it becomes, to your point, like a swan song. And I think it should be like there should be a modicum of hope for for his career, because clearly this is something that he, one, is good at, two, he's overcome a lot to like learn some things, but three, he loves. Yeah. He was so upset when Martel crossed the picket line. You could tell he was trying to be cool about it. But he loves it and he wants to do this and he really showed up, and I don't like the idea that he doesn't really truly get another chance.
Well, you better get used to it, because the rest of his days playing football are going to be underwater with a metal thing wearing a diving suit. So that's what we've established at the beginning of the movie.
At least it's adorable. I mean, at least it's fun to watch. I'll watch it. That's fine. Just somebody get him an oxygen tank, please.
I have one question about the last game that I was perplexed by this plot point. So the leg is up to kick a field goal that I think is going to tie the game.
Oh, God. You know what you're going to say? Go, go, go.
The mobsters are standing in the stands. They bought tickets to see him play, but just to sort of intimidate him and look at him because they're going to steal his bar. So he says, I can't do it. So I'm guessing he's planning to like miss the kick on purpose.
No.
Sorry, I don't think so.
No. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I think I had the same exact thought process, but I think I figured it out. And you tell me if I'm wrong. But I think it's because they think he's going to choke. Like, they don't think he's going to win. They think he's going to bomb and not win. He's not going to have money to pay them. And so then they will get his bar. And they are trying to psych him out. I think they're trying to make him miss. They're trying to make him freak out and like miss the kick so that they can get the bar.
So that's why he says to Shane, I can't do it. Like, they're going to take my bar.
I can't do it. They're going to take my bar. Cause like, if I miss, they're going to take my bar. I don't think he has a lot of confidence at that moment. He's been so psyched out for a hot minute.
So you think he's telling Shane, I think I'm going to miss it because I'm so scared
because I'm so scared right now.
Was saying, I'm sorry, I can't kick this because they're going to, if I kick it and make it,
no,
like steal. But then I was like, well, they win the game anyway. So if they had money riding on the game, he's still dead or whatever. But okay.
I think it's because they're not riding on the game. They're not betting anything specifically. They're just like, you're not going to have money. Like, you're not going to win this. And so we're going to get your bar. And we want that to happen. We want to get your bar. We want this income. We want you to fuck off. I think that's this because it's just how stressed he is. Right. And then, of course, you know, Shane takes the decision and the responsibility out of his hands.
Yeah. Yeah.
And is like, I got you. I think that's just my read on it. I don't know if that's right.
I appreciate it. I mean, it's the same as what I said earlier about the situation with him standing up the cheerleader. It's like, I can find a way to explain away what it might be happening. It doesn't make the original thing any less confusing, but I like that you have a way for me to sort of dig my brain out of
make
this hole.
Make sense of it. You know, we gotta just process what we can. But
yeah,
I think also it ends on this super high note of they win. His bar in theory is not taken away. These guys are not necessarily it's not a fairy tale, but they're all really happy with what they have done.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it gives me strong. I want to know what you think about this. I had such a throwback to like John Hughes at the end of this film, this very like end of Breakfast Club vibes of like the narration. And then literally I was thinking that before this even happened, and then Hackman does the fist motion at the very end. And
yeah,
it's not,
that's a good call.
Not as big as Breakfast Club, like, don't get me wrong, it's not as overt as that, but it's a little fist up, and I'm like, oh, this is such an 80s John Hughes moment. And it vibes with the director who's done, you know, a commensurate film of like Pretty in Pink and all these things.
Yep.
So I was like, oh my God, that kind of is like the energy I was getting for it. And I was like, I think that's why I like this so much. It's just got this wholesome vibe to it.
I could see that for sure. And it makes sense, as you said, with their career track. The only other thing that I really wanted to call out, one of my favorite scenes. I really like, we talked earlier about how cool it was for them to get Madden and Summerall for this. And I thought the scene where Falco and Annabelle are having their first kiss, I thought it was very clever to have the football commentary that goes along with what's happening in the live game when they cut to that. I thought that was pretty damn clever, you know?
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I totally forgot about that, but I totally agree. I think it's such a fun scene. And it's like, you can imagine that is what is playing in his head. You know what I mean? Like something like that, or in hers too, because she's a football fan, right? Like both of them could be having this exact moment, and maybe that's why they're a perfect match for each other. I don't know, but it was super cute. I agree. Yeah.
that line of, and Falco has been shut down by this defense before. Like, cause she doesn't date football players, guys. She doesn't.
He's been so respectful of that. But he, you know what he did though? He like, he just towed the line. He towed the line and he like went and he did the cheek kiss for a second. He was like, did she freak out? Is she upset? She did not freak out. That is a green light for sure. So for him, he felt like it was a green light and he did great, I thought. But yeah, I loved that. Anyway, all that to say, that's basically where this movie ends. They get them into the playoffs. You know, Shane gets the girl, which is great. These guys, in theory, all go back to their lives. Who knows? It's not clear if Jimmy McGinty is going to be kept on or not. But, you know, this great moment has happened. And I think it just ends. It takes you out on such a high. You definitely have questions. You hope that it goes well. But generally, it goes out on such a high that's really fun. And yeah, I think it's a good flick. I think it's a fun football flick for sure.
Completely. Nothing has changed since the beginning when I talked about my thoughts on this movie. I actually think my personal score of it has probably gone up a little bit. Like, I would say just talking about it and laughing, thinking about the things that make me laugh in this and why it is just such a good time. I'm probably going to give it like a 7.5. I think it's a really, really enjoyable film. I don't think it's perfect. I think it's a little not aging great. And there's some moments where I'm just like, roll my eyes a little bit. But it's just a fun movie to watch. Sometimes you just got to turn your brain off and enjoy something for 2 hours. So 7.5.
I totally agree. I'm going to go 7.5 as well. And I kind of used your scale on this, which, as you know, I'm very much a gut checker. But you also like the rewatchability of something. I feel like I can rewatch this in a lot of situations and a lot of contexts and just still like have a good time. And again, like you said, I watch a lot of heavy shit, as we know. And just having like a nice, reliable, fun flick to have a good time with and not be heavy, but still it's a fun, enjoyable experience. I think I'm going to go a solid 7.5.
For the 95 times this episode that we've said, oh man, this hasn't aged well. I thought sitting down to watch this for the first time in probably 10 years that it was going to be bad. I was like, there's no way this is as good as I remember it being back then.
Okay.
But, yeah, shocked. At
so
just,
it
this
won you over, really?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Like, if you went in with such low expectations, I think that's even more of a testament.
I thought I would like throw it on in the background and sort of take notes, but like be multitasking. And I found myself glued because it is a very fun movie. And I think we didn't even touch on the fact that the football that's on film in this is
pretty
accurate
good.
To the real game, and it's fun to watch. Yeah,
and they also like they used a few players that were stunt players, but like overall, it was a lot of the same people who ran the plays. And for that, it's pretty impressive how like if you watch the playback, it looks very similar to a real game in a lot of situations. So yeah, I thought it was really cool. But anyway, we have talked about The Replacements an incredible amount of time.
We went this long on the fucking Replacements.
I'm really impressed by it. But that I think that's a testament to you should go watch it if you've never seen it. It's a good watch. But so what we're gonna do for next week is we're gonna do a wild card entry. So
we thought about doing just a straight up basketball movie. Because it is March Madness, but the whole point of the past 3 weeks has been fuck that tournament. We own the rights now. So we'll be surprising you guys. We're gonna be running some stuff on our socials, but yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be a healthy mix. We're going to have some like ice skating entries, some poker, some, you know, racing, Formula One, all the good stuff. So it'll be a good time either way. Our last entry will be another sport. Don't you fret. But basically, you know, stay tuned. And for now, go have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.
Cheers.